This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, thanks for listening to Remarkable Results Radio. Carm Capriotto here, the pioneer of automotive aftermarket podcasts. You know, mentoring is a special relationship that grows between two individuals and also within themselves personally. With me is Jim Morton and Brandon Steckler, mentor and mentee. We all know that when you teach, you learn. But did you also know that the best mentor never responds to a question with an answer? In this episode, Jim and Brandon discuss the essence of mentorship. They also agree that going back to the basics is the simplest and most often overlooked foundation for any successful diagnostician. I bet you're not surprised. Hey, thanks to our partners, Apex and Shopware, for providing you this episode. You know, imagine walking into a simulated real-world shop environment with 8 bays, lifts, and vehicles where you can see product demos and talk capabilities, benefits, and how to use them in real time. Welcome to the new Joe's Garage at Apex 2021, November 2nd through the 4th in Las Vegas. It's inside of Repair Shop HQ. I'll be there. I hope you stop by and say hi. Register now at AAPEXshow.com. Hey, do you remember the 90s? You know, your shop management system does. Betcha. Printing paper, shuffling clipboards, leaving voicemails. Grab a paper clip while you're at it and pull some trouble codes. The check engine light is flashing and your profits are running lean. On the web at GetShopware.com. Hey, don't forget our live Aftermarket Weekly show on Tuesdays at noon Eastern Time and repurposed as a podcast features a virtual shop tour from all shops around North America. I hope you get your share of the tours. Get an inside glimpse, plus all archived videos are on my Carm Capriotto YouTube page. Enjoy. Hey, such an honor and a incredible warm welcome to Jim Morton, comma, retired, and Brandon Steckler from CTI, author, trainer, WorldPack. These guys each have extreme resumes. We'll get to them as the show progresses. And if not, I promise you, the in-depth resumes will be in our show notes page on the website or even in your podcast player. Hi, guys. Hey, Jim.
How you doing, Carm?
Great, buddy. Good to see you. Hi, Brandon.
Hi there.
We're here to talk about mentoring. I think we talk about mentoring so much when it comes to you've got to build an apprentice program and you put that apprentice program in and one of the key elements of it is a mentor. But Brandon, you know, as you progressed through the industry, you weren't really in an apprentice program, yet you really were. And Jim was your mentor. You've written a bunch of great articles on mentoring. And Jim, when you and I did an episode back in 2017, it was episode 271, you talked about Brandon and how much you enjoyed mentoring. And when you were an instructor, OMG, all the feedback you used to get from your students on the principles that you taught them in school that still apply to today for them and the success that they become the go-to guy. So I said all of that to set it up so that everyone appreciates where we're going with this. And I want people to realize that maybe they have a role in this industry that they don't even know that they have. And that would be one of being a mentor. Jim, was it a heavy burden knowing that you were mentoring Brandon?
Actually, you know, Brandon wasn't the first that I mentored, you know, but it's, I'm not really sure how much people really understand or know what mentoring is. I now know that I really didn't know until you have a certain peak of people after 3, 4, 5 years and you get the feedback. So I think it'd be really good to start off with even, you know, what is mentoring? It's not just showing somebody something. It's a continuous thing.
Let's talk about being a lifelong mentor. A great friend of all of ours, Chris Chesney, has written all kinds of great articles. You know, he just recently retired. Jim, when you say that we all need to be lifelong mentors, what are you really thinking?
You know, if I really look back on it, first of all, my father was an automobile mechanic. He was he was a very good mechanic. And what he showed me at an early age was the mechanical side of the industry. And I definitely thanked him for that. I needed that and everything else. But I also took notice that the amount of hours that he had to work, you know, to make some type of a decent pay to feed the family. So I loved working on cars, but I need to do something else. And that's where I think the important part comes in at, is I went outside of my father. I think everybody really needs to understand, including my father, needed to understand you can't mentor something that you don't know. So my father knew, you know, very good mechanical part of it, but as cars were getting a little more complex, I mean, we're talking complex, late 60s, early 70s, when, you know, we were starting to get into more electronics and stuff. He didn't know that stuff, so he couldn't teach me that. So luckily for me, I guess, I had won a troubleshooting contest way back then. There were Chrysler troubleshooting contests, and the grand prize for that thing was a scholarship to Philco Ford School in Philadelphia. So I went to Philco Ford School. I was there on my second day, and my instructor was a fellow by the name of Tom McKenna. And my second day, I was called into the office. I thought I didn't even have time to get in trouble yet, but they're calling me in the office already. But here, the problem was that my father had a stroke at the shop. And so I left that day, and a couple of days later, I came back, and I thanked the people, including Tom McKenna, for the scholarship, but I wouldn't be able to take it now because I need to work in the shop to feed the family. And Tom McKenna said to me that day, he said, you know, I only had you for a day and a half, but I think you got something between your ears. And he said, if you can come back, you have a scholarship waiting for you. But if you can't, I do a lot of teaching in the evening. And here, you know, he worked for Sunscopes and everything else. And the end result is, I guess it wasn't called a mentor then, but basically what I did with 25 years with Tom McKenna was followed him around, and he was called in on all the higher end problems and stuff. So without being called a mentor or whatever, that's what he basically did for me. And I really think back on it, Carm, you know, would I have ever achieved the level that I did? Would I have ever gone the angle or the direction that I did? I say absolutely no, because I didn't have anybody to show me. And what you find in this industry way too many times, and Brendan and I have talked about this, you get a set of people trying to help you. You got people in the shop trying to pull you down because they, you know, they want to be the top guy in the shop or something. They don't want to show you anything, you know. I was never afraid of running out of work if I showed somebody, you know, something and stuff, you know. So lucky for me, I really had an excellent mentor in Tom McKenna. And I think this very important part of this whole conversation is that Tom McKenna never gave me anything. He made me work for it. What I mean by that is if I had some questions, you know, about what he just showed me, he would give me question me about that question. They asked me, well, what do you think and stuff? And he wouldn't give me anything. And I look back, I think there was times I was mad about that, but you know what? He knew that I need to use my brain.
You just said something that really blew me over. And Brandon, this really, I want to kind of lay this into you. He said the words, show me. And when I think of all the business podcasts that I've done when it comes to management and leadership and finance and succession, there are so many people out there that just can't get their ego out of the way. They think they know it all, and they're floundering, they're struggling. And, you know, I've never really thought of the word that a shop owner would go to a peer and say, show me how to do this. And it reminds me of such a powerful two words for a technician to go to a peer or that more knowledgeable individual that he is working with and say, show me. Brandon, is there an ego thing in accepting a mentor?
I'll be the first to say, if you can't get past that ego, you're dead in the water, because there's always somebody that knows more than you. And And what impressed me most about Jim is when I met Jim, it was actually at an evening class. He was teaching a class called the ABCs and D's of Ignition. And what blew me away is that it's not so much that he knew how to fix a car, but his confidence that he exuded as he was delivering this class. It didn't matter what car placed upon four wheels was in front of him. He would have this car diagnosed in 15 minutes or less regarding an ignition system fault. And my brain couldn't get past that. I couldn't understand how somebody could know that much. So if there was an ego in the way, you wouldn't be able to absorb that kind of material. I could perhaps memorize something he was trying to show me temporarily, but I would never fully absorb it, if that makes sense.
So I think I heard you say common sense. You got to have a ton of common sense to be a great diagnostician.
Yeah, common sense and a thorough understanding of the basics. I know we hear it in almost every class, and I think it goes through most technicians' ears and out the other side quite rapidly, because that's the last thing they want to hear. You know, they're in class and they're paying for these classes, and everybody likes to think of themselves as an advanced technician, especially once they've had a few years under their belt. So nobody wants to sit in a class and hear, you really have to master the basics. But, and Jim, what's it been, 15 years now, give or take? About 15 years? I can sit back on my haunches and giggle and say, son of a gun, it really is mastery of the basics. Going back to basics, everything else is icing on top. We might think of faster, easier ways to find a problem, but it's these basic tests of these basic systems that we really have to master.
Are you done learning, Brandon?
Never. Oh, my goodness. I have been away from the automotive world as far as my hands on the vehicles full time for just about 2 years now. And really quickly, I'm slowly starting to see things pull away from me. So I have to run to catch up. And I do so as often as possible. But no, it will always be a life learning process.
I love that. I have to run to catch up.
I do.
And okay, so think about the working technician, the working diagnostician who's in it every day and he's seeing something new and brand new every day. He still has to commit to at least walking toward all that learning. You know, since you've been out of it, you have to run to it. Let's go back to the mentorship thing. As I was mentioning Chris Chesney earlier, I dug up an article on him, and he writes, mentorship is a relationship where a more experienced or knowledgeable person helps guide a less experienced or knowledgeable person. Yet he says the stigma of mentors is that they should be the most experienced, oldest, and or most productive test or tech. And of course, that's false. Jim, Brandon, share, you know, obviously I believe you would agree with Chris. So what gets in our way out in the real world of mentor-mentee relationships?
Well, I'll be the first to say that key word is guide. Jim never made me do anything. In fact, it was the opposite. One of the first things Jim told me was, listen, I'm going to give you a shot, and I see you have this fire in your belly, but if that fire in your belly ever goes out, I'm going to drop you like a hot potato. You understand? Those exact words, and I'll never forget that. And he really was guiding me. He would never, the moment I wanted to quit, he wouldn't push me. Okay, that's fine if you want to quit. So it really is a guide. You're going to have to want to pursue your goal towards excellence, towards getting better at what you do.
Boy, I'm exactly right. And what he's saying, I can say about my mentor. He did the same identical thing. He never forced me to do anything. You know, if I ever lost my drive, he wanted nothing to do with me then at that point. He wanted to guide me and stuff, you know. And I do remember him saying one time, though, that he said to me, if you ever sit there and tell me that you know everything, he said, first of all, I'm going to hit you in the back of the head with a 2x4. He said, and the second thing is, as you just said those words, the car, the manufacturers just changed something on the cars. So there's nobody's going to know everything. You have to be able to keep up with it. That's why he harped on me so much when I harp on Brennan and others, what I call the 85-15%. What was the real theme of Brennan's mentorship was making sure, like he said, the 85%, every manufacturer does that. You know, they have to make and break a primary to create a secondary. They have to combustion in the chamber. How they do it is the 15%. So what my mentor always told me, and I beat in Brennan's head, is that you should You should know the 85% inside, upside down, and backwards. But you should know where to be able to get the 15% at. Now, don't ever think you're going to have it all in your head. You need the information. For whatever reason, some people's ego is so large that they just can't absorb that they're going to have to be able to look up information from time to time. Now, Brendan said something earlier about that it made no difference what kind of car it was that I was looking at. And the reason being is that the 85%, I'm going to find that 15%, you know. And just to, you know, kind of give you an idea how, I'm going to say how the torch was being passed from myself to Brendan, is that my mentor, Tom McKenna, he and I did a class together at one of my shops on a Thursday evening. And as he was leaving the shop, he was going to go the next day to California to teach in California. And he was leaving, he turned around to me and said, a car is going to come in first thing tomorrow morning here. He said, it's a crank nose start. It was a 1993 vehicle. And I said, Tom, I can't. I said, I got all this work. But he goes, just shut up. He said, just concentrate on what you have to do. So his like mentorship never stopped. It was always pushing me all the time. So as he's walking out the door and he's going to his car, he turned around to me and he said, look at the brake system. I said, oh, great. Now, besides the thing running bad, you want me to look at the brakes also? And he just kept on walking, got in his car, and he left. So actually, my wife, Mary, was there, and Mary said, you know, he just gave you a clue. And I said, yeah, I know. I got to figure out the clue now, you know. So the next morning, what I did, it turned out that it was a intermittent storm problem. And make a long story short, what it turned out to be was the brake switch wasn't operating correctly, so the computer didn't know what to do with the fuel injection. So it was a simple thing a very, very common low-hanging fruit, basics, you know. I checked the basics first. So Saturday morning, he's at his hotel room in California, and he thinks I'm not going to be able to fix this thing. So I called him about 10:30 his time in California, and I said, I got it. And he said, really, how long did it take? I said, 5 minutes, you know. It took longer than that, but I just told him 5 minutes, you know. But basically what he did to me, though, Barry also realized, he could have just told me. He already knew what was wrong with the vehicle. He could have just told me that. But he wanted to, now here I am talking to you, you know, 30 years later, and I still remember like yesterday, you know. You got to check the basics all the time.
You know what I find fascinating here? Are techs mentored and they don't even know it?
Absolutely. I don't remember him. He did a lot of teaching, but he really never mentored anybody other than me, I guess because I wouldn't back off, I guess, you know. And to make a long story short, by the way, I mentioned that it was 10:30 his time when I called him. About 42 minutes later, he had a massive heart attack in that hotel room and died. And I just remember the first thing, obviously very sad, I'm 25 years with him. I said, I have a lot more questions to ask you. How could you do that to me? How could you pass? Now, and I can tell you that after that, you know, I wound up basically taking over his business. That's how I got started with the mobile, and that's why I sold the shops and stuff. And every time I was up against a job, as Brendan, it's the same identical thing. So, okay, what would he have done here? What would he have done here, you know? And I made sure that I wasn't going to be jumping over the basics and stuff, you know? And to put it all quite in a nutshell, that Brendan has said this numerous times, and I'll say the same thing. Tom McKenna passed the torch to me, and I passed it to Brendan. Now, he's passing it to other people right now. And it all comes down to, you know, we're talking about now, 35, 40 years of vehicles. It's still the same.
We're teaching the same stuff.
The basics is still the same. And that mentor, whoever that mentor is, he can't, you know, you can't just go and start teaching somebody, you know, variable valve time and issues and reprogramming the modules, you know. I see these people every day of the week trying to reprogram modules, and I ask them a question. What does that module do? Well, I don't know. It makes something operate. How can you know if that module is reprogrammed if you don't know the basics, what it's supposed to do, you know. And that's a good mentor to build that strong foundation of the basics first.
So how do we develop our young talent, guys?
For starters, not only must we look within our industry, but other industries as well with the same mindset. I mean, just because somebody's not particularly fond of using their hands or have the confidence to use their hands like most mechanically based jobs or automotive technicians do, it doesn't mean we can't excite them in some way, shape, or form to use their talents in our industry. As Jim mentioned, with electronics and programming and computers and software, the mindset to think at that level is something that carries over to other industries as well. And I think if we can excite those individuals, we can stand a good chance of having them be a value to our industry. But as far as the technicians that we already have, I think getting people started off on the right foot is absolutely crucial. I'm going to be the first to say that what is taught in schools, at least when I was in school, and I'm quite confident it hasn't really changed much, if at all. I learned to pass a test, Carm. I learned what I had to learn, and it certainly wasn't on purpose. I didn't do it this way. It wasn't my intentions. But I absorbed enough where I could pass a test, and usually with straight A's. I did excellent in school. I always have. But retaining it, I'll give you, for instance, I remember hearing stuff about valve overlap in engine mechanical class, and I distinctly remember the conversation the instructor was delivering to us, but I never even spoke the words valve overlap again until relatively recently, probably within the last 10 years, because it didn't make sense in my mind and I had no use for it. Again, I absorbed it to pass a test, but it didn't really mean anything to me. I think if we can teach at that deeper level, it would mean more.
Carm here. Well, here's an interesting question for you. As a diagnostician, are you fixing a problem or fixing the effect of the problem? Well, keep listening and learn more. With registration now open for APEX 2021 in Las Vegas, you can already feel the excitement building for this year's homecoming. Now, I can't wait to reconnect with all of you in person and share stories of our time apart, both professional and personal. And I also can't wait to sit in on the technical and business management training specifically for you, the service professional. With more than 20 sessions, you'll hear from the best of the best, including Mike Reynolds, who will lead training on ADAS for the diagnostic technician, and Jeremy O'Neill, who will lead a class on selling the invisible service solution. Make sure to also experience the new Repair Shop HQ and Joe's Garage. It's designed with you in mind. And visit the show floor to see many new products and emerging technologies. The dates again, November 2nd through the 4th, 2021. Be there. Hey, register now at aapexshow.com. Are you stuck in small ticket rut? Well, that's exactly what happened to Dominic Linden and the team at Autobahn Service in Sheffield, Massachusetts. With the busy day-to-day bustle of shop operations, they didn't have time to chase customers for approval. They were caught in a cycle of low AROs, and they were losing those higher ticket jobs to competitors. Autobahn Service was introduced to Shopware, and just a few months after going live, the shop was so busy with new jobs that they actually needed to lower their car count. They are now able to be selective with the services they take on, and profits have never been better. Additionally, by tapping into Shopware's digital estimating capabilities, Autobahn Service has noticed an 89% average approval rate from customers. Their average RO before Shopware was $450, and now it's up to $700. Now, that's a 55% increase. Do the math. Reach your customers faster and get approved dollars up. GetShopware.com. Jim, you did a lot of years working for Automotive Training Center in Warminster. Warminster. Did I say that right? Warminster? PA?
Yeah.
And Brandon, of course, you now with CTI and WorldPAC. So education is part of your passion, and it's what you do. You bring up such a great point about secondary education or post-secondary. I'm on an advisory panel of our post-secondary here in Western New York, and we continue to question, why are we teaching engine, you know, mechanics? Why are we stripping down an engine? I have shared that with people in the industry, and they say, to your point, Jim, what's the module do? How does the engine work? How does combustion really work? I'm not sure you can learn that maybe in a video or a PowerPoint, but if you're in it and you realize you tore something apart and put it back together, but do our curriculums need to change at all?
No, even when I was teaching post-secondary, just to make sure some people understand that, I never ever woke up one morning and said, I want to be an educator. I'm very successful with the three shops. And then when Tom died, I took over his mobile diagnostic business. And I received a phone call. Like I said, Tom died in 1993. In 1995, I received a phone call from the post-secondary school, the automotive training center. And it turned out that an electrical instructor had walked out in the middle of an 8-week class. And they were stuck. They needed somebody. So the owner, who was a former student of that school, made phone calls, and everybody told him to try to get me, because I guess people thought I retired or something. I didn't. I was actually busier than ever, traveling all around with the mobile diagnostics. And I told the owner of that school I felt really bad for the students, but, you know, no, I can't do that. I can't stop. And he said, well, you haven't even asked me what I'm going to pay you. And I said, you have a fax machine there? This is 1995. He said, yeah. I said, how if I just fax you my receipts from yesterday? You know, and then you'll see, you know, and I did that, and he got back to me, says, wow, I can't, no way in the world I could ever match that. And I got off the phone, and my wife, Mary, said, you hypocrite. And I said, oh, here we go. And what's this about now? She said, what did Tom do for you? She said, 4 weeks, I'll change your schedule. She set my schedule. I said, I'll change your schedule around. It'll be a little bit tougher. Go teach to 1:30 to that school, and then go out and do the mobile. And I'm going to get into the mentorship thing. I just went and taught these guys. They already had 4 weeks of electrical, and they had 4 more weeks. And I just spent the first day just asking them, teach me what you learned already. And I was shaking my head saying, that will never work for you earning money in the industry. So I said, now we got to cram 8 weeks into 4 weeks. I did that. I left. The owner of the school came back to me, and he said, wanted me to come back. And I said, I can't do this. Reason being, this is an important part of what Brennan's saying. The information that was required to be taught, it just did not flow with what the tech would have to do in the real world. So I told the owner of the school, I can't come back. I can't be told, you know, what to teach. I understand you have to do it to get the students in. He said, how about this then? He said, how about if we do something? He said, I went to the school and I graduated. And when I graduated, I thought I could go out and fix anything. He said, but then my stupid boss gave me a repair order and I had to figure out how to fix the car. He said, I wasn't prepared. It took me 2 or 3 years to figure out, like Brendan said, to put it together, you know. He says, how if we do this? How about if we offer my students that graduate, they're ready to graduate, how about we offer those students the option to stay here for 8 more weeks and you teach them for 8 weeks? You can call it whatever you want to call it. So, Michelangelo, that's what I wound up doing. And Carmen, I think this is so important. I said, you know, people say, what did you teach in that course? I taught what I had, what I was handed the day before. So I left out of school every day and went out and did the mobile diagnostics. The next morning, whatever car it was on the board. What I was told was on the board. And okay, now what would you people do? And I'll be honest with Carm, you want to talk about mentorship. So I was actually mentoring 25 students at one time, you know, because they stand there, they couldn't say to me, are we going to see this? Well, I just saw it yesterday, you know. And what they did get to see, which I think is extremely important, is I'm getting called out on, quote, unquote, the hardest jobs. Well, they saw in no time that it really wasn't a hard job. Somebody wasn't using their common sense. They were jumping right over, you know. I can tell me that a car didn't have any gas in it or something, you know. I'm the fourth person looking at the car. So my point of the whole thing is that when I taught post-secondary, the reason why I stayed for 21 years was I did that class. They kept on changing the name of that class. But those students, you talk about, you know, when you and I talked the last time back in 2017, from 2017 to now, those students that were in that class, some of the students now, they're factory troubleshooters. One of them is in charge of Subaru training for North America, and it all comes back to the basics. You know, every year you need to be, like, get into the program and all that stuff, but you need to understand first, does it need that? And something that Brendan and I talk about all the time that I beat in his head for mentoring, and I think mentors have to do this, is that, are you really finding the problem on the car, or are you finding the effect of the problem? And that's why there's so many comebacks, I think. You know, it's really not a comeback. You never fix it the first time. You know, I'll use an example. Say an injector goes bad or something. Well, maybe the injector's going bad because it's working so hard because of a restriction in the fuel pump or the fuel filter. Or in modern cars today, the fuel rail. You know, or are you finding the car didn't run right, now you put a part in, now it's running better, and you let it go. And 2 weeks later, it comes back in again. What are they going to do right away? It's a bad part, defective part. How about if it was defective diagnostics? Mm-hmm. And that's where the mentor with Brandon, when I did, I still did think of you, remember. When I realized that I could do it with him, I can remember one job in particular. I went out, looked at a vehicle, I diagnosed what was wrong with it, I turned around to the owner of the shop, and I said, I'm not going to charge you because you're kidding. He said, you're not going to charge me your fee at all. I said, nope. I said, but here's the deal though. Don't fix it today. I said, I'm going to have somebody come tomorrow and look at it. And I'm going to see what he finds on the vehicle. And I put a couple more things wrong with the car besides what I found. And that was, you know, you talk about an education. And I made sure I wasn't there. You know, he didn't have me to lean on. But he knew he had to call me and tell me what he found and stuff, you know. And so, you know, Brett has used the word a couple of times. You used the word a couple of times. The last thing in the world a mentor needs is an ego, because that's going to ruin everything, you know. You need to make that person work, because sooner or later the cord's going to be cut and that person's got to be able to do it themselves, you know. And in my case, my cord was cut instantly one day. And I was standing there like, oh my God, what am I going to do now? What am I going to do now? You know? That's truly what a mentor has to be able to do, I think, anyway.
Quorum, to your question and to what Jim is stating right now, to tie it all together, case studies. What needs to be taught in school is what we call the industry is case studies, live examples. Paul Danner, Scanner Danner, does an excellent, excellent job of doing that. And I think if I could, at the time, I know he's not with the school any longer, but if I could have recommended anybody to a school where they'd learn, that'd be the place I'd point them, Rosedale Technical Institute. And it was simply because, not because of the school itself, but it was Paul Danner's way of teaching, demonstrating through example and showing his goof-ups as well as his successes and where he went wrong, and then explaining the test procedures and what they're designed to show and the physics behind them. And that is what people need to learn, because that's the stuff that sinks in. And you'll pass the test 100% every time if you understand it. But more importantly, you get to take that back to the shop with you, these tactics and these techniques. And that's how cars get fixed properly the first time.
Like, you know, Brendan said that, you know, you can just go to school and get hundreds and test. But what Paul did and what I tried to do, you know, make sure that they were able to do it. If I had a dime for every shop owner I ran into and said, boy, you ruined my shop. I said, how did I ruin your shop? He said, one of your students works for me. He said, all the hard jobs now, my season's tax, they say, leave it to when so-and-so comes in at 2 o'clock. You know, he'll take care of it. You know, it's crazy.
It's a shame that anyone would say you ruined their shop. Actually, you made it better, but they can't. Maybe they can't quite see the fact that
that's what they meant. Yeah,
they have a semi genius there who's constantly learning. Brandon, are you mentoring anyone?
Officially, no, but I try and take what I've learned from Jim, and in the fashion that he's taught me, where it makes sense, and that's how I try to present information. I try to teach like that. Lots of people say I make things easy, and that's the goal. I try to make it easy because it's really not hard. It just takes an understanding. So, am I mentoring anybody in particular? No, but I look at everybody who comes to class with me as someone I'd like to mentor, and I do help people on the side too.
I think he is mentoring, but in a different way though. Where I had him and other people right in front of me. I honestly believe his articles and his classes, he is mentoring. He's not sitting there saying, I'm the only one that can do this. He said he's showing people how to do things. So
I want to rephrase the question. Are you challenging anyone?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I have a couple of things I've learned from, if you want to say, being a teacher. First of all, I don't look at myself as a teacher. I don't teach people anything. I show them what worked for me. Jim proved it to me, and I want to prove it to them. So I don't teach. I show what works for me. And I'd rather, when somebody comes to me with a question, I'd rather ask them a question that they can answer rather than tell them the answer. And they find when they do that digging, it really sinks in.
How smart. How absolute smart. We so many of us want to be the answer man, and I have the answer to that, and we don't really realize that the person may not get 1 ounce of benefit from your wisdom if you don't challenge their thinking. Like Jim, look at the brakes, and the guy kind of knew what the answer was, but he forced Jim to do that, and 25 years later he tells the story again.
The funny part is, Carm, many times I don't have the answer because I just don't know. But I say to them, let's think this through together. Let's do some testing. Let's try this. Let's try that and see what we come up with. And I learn because of their inquiry.
Isn't it amazing when you teach, you learn?
Yeah, I'm a far better technician because of it.
A powerful addition to what Brendan just said is George Mensa. Every time I've ever toyed any place with him, his favorite phrases is, what do you know? Go with what you know first, And once you figure out what you do know, it's pretty easy to figure out what is wrong with the vehicle at that point.
I've got a comment on something, Jim. I remember you sending me some stuff. Is we were communicating a while back, and you sent me an email about receiving a message from one of your students that I always taught. Know your opponent. I totally love the story that you sent me. Can you share a little bit about that story?
Well, I've used that whole thing many ways, and that's from Tom McKenna. He would tell me all the time, "What are you going to do to this vehicle?" Well, I don't know yet. I'm going to go over there and see what I got and stuff, And he said, "Go sit down." I said, "Why?" He goes, "Go over and sit down." He said, "And when you understand enough about how the circuit's supposed to work, then go over." He said, "Because what's going to happen? You're just going to go over and leave like fingerprints on the fenders or something. You're not going to fix anything." He said, "You got to understand exactly, what you got to know your opponent." And the thing I kind of associated with, or like an analogy with, I professionally boxed and kickboxed also, and when I first started, I didn't have any money for a trainer or like that. So I had to find out by my opponent by getting in the ring with him and getting hit a couple times, But when I finally had a trainer, I distinctly remember the first time I had a trainer, and he had already studied the person I'm going to fight. And I felt I knew this guy's whole family life before I even stepped in the ring with him, because I knew exactly every time he was going to, throw a left jab at me, he was going to drop his right hand and everything else. I thought, I associate that with the same thing with working on cars. Now, I'm not going to say I have no chance, but I'm going to be like every other tech out there and waste a lot of time if I don't understand exactly, how this circuit and how this is supposed to work,
part of that story is to always get out the wiring diagrams, and the rest of the story goes, is it's kind of like being a little bullied because he always wanted to do this, and then 5 years later he was the guy because he stuck to the plan. Brandon, do you see a lot of that?
Absolutely. It's a lot of these students of these mentors, they turn out to look like absolute wizards in the shop due to A, their age, and B, how quickly they progress through a diagnosis, a proper diagnosis down to the root cause. And it looks like absolute magic from the untrained eye or from someone who's been doing it, I'll call it the hard way, for years and years and years. And it truly is just mastery of the basics and knowing when to reach for information so you can educate yourself.
And it's a shame how many times a shop owner or a service manager or whatever won't allow a tech the time. You know, they say, he goes over and he goes over his computer with his crayons over there and stuff. You know, well, yeah, you're pulling a wine diagram, a color cutting a wine diagram, because the tech isn't on the car. The shop owner or the shop foreman thinks nothing's being done. Now, you can go over to the car and spend 3 hours over there and not be any further ahead than you were before. And there again, my mentor said to me all the time, he says, stop every 5 minutes and ask yourself if you're any further along than you were 5 minutes ago. And the first time you answer no, stop and figure out your opponent at that point, you know. And I got so many of my students come back to me, said, Mr. Morton, you showed us every day how this works, but I go to work and they get mad at me if I pull a wine diagram. I said, don't you know anything? You know, like that. He says, I'm doing exactly what you trained me to do, you know. A lot of times I would have to call the shop because they usually call me and wanted me to send somebody there. I send somebody there, do me a favor, just let them, for 1 week anyway, let them work the way I trained them. And just put a set of blinds on your office window or something so you don't see them. But look at the paperwork at the end of the month. You know,
Jim, is it true you're going to be at ASTE this year?
Yeah, ironically, I'm going to be there. It's the first live class I'm doing in a long time. And I think this is very important for this whole thing. They asked me what I wanted to do. I said, they said, we don't care what you do, what everyone does. I said, you know what I want to do? I've spent the last year and a half helping people on phone calls and on the computer and watching Diagnostic Network and listening to people talk and stuff. What I've seen in the last year and a half is the basics are being missed day after day after day. You know, 4 days later, when you find out that car had one bad cell in the battery or something. So why all the things didn't work? So my class, to answer your question, my class is this ASTE. First of all, it's going to be dedicated to my wife. She believed more in training than anybody I ever knew and stuff. She used to tell the applicants all the time that if you don't want to be involved with ongoing training, this is not the shop for you, you know. And she told them all the time that, you know, I want you to understand something. You're going to be a mechanic here, and you're going to work for us. But she used to say all the time that these are my customers, and you're not going to practice on my customers' cars and stuff. So what I'm going to do at ASTE is I'm going to hit three powerful, I think, subjects. Number one, the proper interviewing technique. The vehicle owner knows a lot about what's wrong with the vehicle, you know. And then what we've been talking about, you know, are you actually get your diagnostic procedure? Or did you actually find a problem, or did you find the effect of the problem? You know, people talk about comebacks. I say, have I ever had a comeback? I'm sure I did, Carm, but I was not Matty, because if I would have let the car go right away, if I put that part on, I would have had just as many comebacks as everybody else. You know, when we did have comebacks, the general rule of thumb, what it was, is we told the customer, look, the car didn't run before, it runs now, okay? But we don't think we got the problem. We got the effect of the problem. We need more than another hour on the tire. And if they said no, and that, you know, everybody's going to say the same thing. We're getting rid of the car in 2 weeks anyway. Right? Well, when they don't get rid of the car in 2 weeks and it comes back in, I'm going to pull out the RO where we talked about this. And so it's not a comeback. You just didn't let me fix the car You know, you didn't let my technician, every technician we had, you know, I mentored them. You know, we had three shops, and they're all mentored. You know,
I've heard so many great stories from top service advisors and owners and coaches that says you got to write a novel about what the customer says, but you also have to know how to interview them and ask them about what they believe that their symptoms are and what's wrong with the vehicle. Let's go back to you, Brandon. You're going to be at ASTE. What are you teaching at ASTE?
Well, I'm doing my pressure waveform acquisition and analysis from the inside out class, and it's basically taken the novice pressure transducer diagnostician to a new level, giving them or her the confidence to invest in the tooling necessary to conduct this type of analysis. And the idea is to gain an understanding of what's going on inside the engine before taking it apart. And today's course, it's just so tightly packed in there. Engine work is hours and hours and hours to do.
So in our waning moments here, Brandon, I want to ask you about COVID, the training studio you guys built in Raleigh, and the future of training. Did you enjoy what you were doing, virtually for over a year?
At first, I was a bit scared. I was worried about what was going to happen with the future of trainers like myself that are on the road a lot when we can't conduct business as usual. So this was kind of a blessing in disguise. Certainly wish I was back in front of the guys and the girls in class, because the dynamic that occurs there is just so much more powerful. But to the virtual training, we as instructors with CarQuest Technical Institute are getting better and better and more comfortable with it. And we are able to almost replicate what we had in a live classroom. And in fact, with the technology we're implementing in classes to come, we are simply going to be able to demonstrate things virtually that we simply cannot do live. So my answer to your question is virtual teaching is going to be far more exciting in times to come, and very, very excited for it. I think the future of training is going to be in virtual.
So your preference would be 50% face-to-face then?
Yeah, well, I can't stop talking, so I love being around people. That's part of my problem. So I'm always going to want to be in front of the class, you know, because of the fun that occurs there. But it's so convenient for me to enjoy myself at home, the comfort of my own home, teaching and doing what I love to do with the people I love to be around. It's more like being around friends than it is a teacher-student environment.
You and I did an episode. It was episode 342. And you were talking about your goals of really wanting to be a premier instructor in the industry. And that's before I think you ever really launched. Happy with where you are today?
I recall that conversation, Carm. That was certainly fun. I am pleased with where I am today. I would much rather be in front of a live class, but I think things are going well. And I think I judge that by the amount of feedback I get on a personal level from people through private messenger and emails and mentions in Facebook chats. I enjoy teaching as much as people say they enjoy watching me teach. I'm proud of that, and I'm happy about that. It really makes me happy.
So you're writing for MotorEdge too. Lots, I think, at least monthly and or more, right?
I am. As of January 2019, I was promoted to technical editor. So I contribute just like other contributors do fairly regularly, but my duties are a bit more now. And I'm enjoying that as well. A lot more responsibility and learning to work in a team-type atmosphere is something that's new to me. As a technician, you're typically, I'll say, on your own. You know, you're responsible for your own work and such. But working with a team is something that took some getting used to. And I got to say, it's the best team I could possibly ever ask for. They've been so patient with me and helpful. I'm super excited about that.
Jim, thanks for all your great insights, your wisdom from a mentor's perspective, and the great stories that you tell. I mean, God, we can go on for hours hearing those wonderful stories. And Brandon, your take on, you know, what's going on today, and as the receptor of some of Jim's mentoring. This was a wonderful, wonderful episode. Jim Morton, of course, retired, but I think they're dragging you out to a new class at ASTE this year, which is great. And Brandon Steckler from CTI, thanks so much, guys, for being here.
Thanks, Carm. Honor to be here again, as usual.
Yeah. Good seeing you, Carm.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.